Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good evening, and good afternoon to all my blessed beloveds out there in Radio Land. Happy May 1st. May 1st is an important day to look at and take a little bit of a step back from your daily routine, even if you're looking out the window for a moment in your office, and realize that spring is a sign of renewal and new beginnings and sprouts and gardening and all of the things that make life wonderful and adventurous. I was able to work very diligently on the gardens over the weekend, and I have my earth manicure and pedicure, and for those of you who know what that is, that's basically your nails are all broken and there's nothing you can do about it, but it has been fun, and to hear the birds chirp and the sun has been up and shining and bright in the sky, it's just been, it's been motivational and inspirational. So I'm hoping that everyone is having beautiful weather out there. And Amy, you're there. Oh, hello.
Hi.
Have you had an opportunity
to
dig in the dirt?
We never get to see each other anymore.
I know. We never see each other. I don't think we've seen each other in 6 weeks.
I don't think so either. But that's
been crazy.
To an end because the recital is May 11th and suddenly my life becomes mine again.
Right, right.
And then we can spend more time together. But
yay!
So I'm looking forward to that. And
great.
There's a lot going on in, you know, a lot going on in my world right now. A lot of good things and busy things. That's part of the reason why no one sees me these days. But I've been busy creating some things. So I'll let you know as that all unfolds. I'm getting ready to open a store, I think.
Yay, good.
Yeah, makes sense.
Happy beginnings.
And I thought it'd be nice to say it on May Day, which, like you said, is new beginnings. And I'm basically making the decision that that's what I'm gearing my next year toward is making all that happen. So, there's a lot going on. And as you know, I'm a very happy clam in spring because I also have been just planting flowers, really. I haven't really done any outside gardening too much because, as you know, it still gets chilly at night. So I will wait for Memorial Day weekend to put all my stuff in the ground, and then I will be very happy.
Now you make me feel like I'm this amazing woman because I was out there in 2030
last
night. Yay!
You are an amazing woman.
The southern
woman.
Girl out here. And I did it. Bug-free and all.
Yay. Yeah.
Well, I just wanted to check in with you and have everybody check in with you, but I'm so excited about our guest today. His name is Danny Bader, and he's an inspirational speaker and writer, and he has this book that I cannot wait to get my hands on, but unfortunately that would be 22 books from now.
I'm very interested in the book as well.
Yeah. So Danny's written a book called Back from Heaven's Front Porch, and I'm dying to sink in my teeth into it and learn a little bit about him. He was actually referred to me from somebody, and as I say on every show, keep bringing him because I'm just loving it, and this show is for you and by you, and interestingly enough, this person I believe is out of the country, so I don't know if Danny knows how popular he has become. So I'm going to pull him on so that he can speak for himself. Good afternoon.
Hi, Rusty. Hi, Amy.
How
and anybody
you?
Else that's on.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. About to step outside in the nice sunshine.
Yes. Yeah, I'm outside of Philadelphia, and as I chatted with you, I did some work this morning, got in a little run, you know, so I was very thankful for that. It's a gorgeous day.
Yes, it is.
All right, so, Danny, why don't you give us an idea of who you are and what you do? I gave a little tickler, but I think it always sounds better from the person who does the work.
Oh, okay. So my name is Danny Bader, and I work a couple places, really. I work for myself to do speaking engagements with folks, and I talk to them about a philosophy that I have called Jackrabbit. That is covered in the book, and we'll probably get more into that. And then I also work as a productivity consultant, so I do coaching within organizations and do seminars and trainings and those kinds of things. So professionally, kind of two paths there. I live outside of Philadelphia with my wife and three kids. I'll be 50 in November, so stepping over into those wonderful years. And I'm enjoying the feedback and the response that I've gotten from this book that I wrote probably started 8 or 10 years ago. One of those projects where you got into it, and then you got out of it, and then you got back into it, and then you get in. And then mm-hmm. I got a little bit of focus, and it moved along to closure, which is often the case. So, yeah, it's called Back from Heaven's Front Porch, and quick overview is it's written based on reality. The main character's name is Jake, and he's 28 years of age, and he has an accident that leaves a friend of his dead, and Jake also had an experience of crossing over and then came back. So that's what the title of the book is, and then the book is really about Jake's, it's a little bit about the experience that he had when he left his body and spent some time with God. It's a lot about Jake's journey to get better. Jake's journey parallels mine. I suppress it in the book into several months, but it's really been, you know, a journey of a lifetime for me. And how do you kind of stay in that happy and fulfilled pocket of life, which I think is so important for us.
Well, and I think, the dates could not have been better to invite you on the show and have you accept, because, again, you know, here we are with renewal and spring and barbecues and shorts and touching the earth with our feet. We haven't, for those of us who are up here in the snow territory, you know, it's all about this wonderful renewal. And I think happiness is a huge key to sparking that peace in you. So do you want to talk a little bit more about happiness? How do you fulfill that?
Yeah, sure. So where the quest came from is I've always strived to be happy, and happy for me is in the moment, right? So you have a positive outlook, you're fully engaged with life, even in the negative times, you know, you're engaged. Most times people say, well, happiness is just when you're up and you're upbeat. Now, life sometimes sucks. And there's times in there where there's another side of happiness that, for me, I mean, without sadness and without depression and without, oh, my God, that sucks, we wouldn't have happiness. So I see them as very much related. The key is, for me, not to stay. It's okay to get in that other side of, oh, my God, this is horrible. I'm really sad about this. I don't feel too good. We're always going to get there. The key is, how do I get back to happiness? And then I have five principles that I practice that I got from just studying people. Because after the accident, I was not happy, and I certainly couldn't get back to it. I was going the opposite way. So happiness for me is just in the moment. And I think there are some things we can do. There are certainly some things that I do that keep me happy in the moment.
All right.
Yeah.
I love how you're really to the point, because people have bad days. You're going to stub your toe. Your boss is going to snap at you, or your husband or your wife or whatever. You're going to have those moments. It's the quality of time that you spend in that negative zone of that moment versus snapping out of it and realizing that there's no ownership. Their behavior really has nothing to do with you. You just happen to be there.
Right.
So work with the audience a little bit about, you know, say, I don't know, your kid's having a bad day and slams their backpack down and they don't want to talk to you. And it kind of, as a parent, you just, you become
wow.
unhappy.
Were you in my
right?
house yesterday and today, this morning?
I have an 8-year-old, so we had a little drama.
Oh, man. Yeah, you know, I my kids always get there. My son, Joey's 16, and he didn't pass his driver's test on Saturday and was really, you know, bummed out about it.
Yeah.
And I tried to make some joke, and he said, Dad, it's not funny. And I said, you know what, Joe, you're right. It's not. You really trained hard for this. Now you got to wait a couple more weeks to take it, and I'm bummed out for you. I said, but in reality, I know it's a big deal to you. Just kind of slow down, because it doesn't make sense to just be in that negative space for 4 weeks until you take it again. And the
right.
key is really kind of learn from this. So when you go back in, what do you think contributed to you not passing? I got nervous because as a teacher, I knew her. She failed my friends, and the parallel parking was between cones. It wasn't between cars, and I never go between cones. And I said, great, so how are you going to shift your perspective going into the next time? Because it's going to be the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always trying to flip, and you'll see a big part of my methodology, and a lot of people's is vision. you know, vision is so powerful, and we all know, I'm sure everybody listening here, it's nothing new to you, but to develop a good, strong vision gives you the focus that you're going to be more inclined to take action that's going to produce the vision and turn it into a reality. So how do we hold on to something really positive? So how do we pull up and we see this woman and engaging with her, and how do we see ourselves putting this car real cleanly in between those two cones and then pulling out, and then how do we see ourselves finishing the rest of it? So I always try to impart that whole principle of seeing something in our mind before it happens, which is I call vision, and that's why I call it the methodology Jackrabbit, because of all the, when I started this little company, and you know, it's still just me, when I started it, I wanted an animal as the mascot or the logo, and I searched, and the jackrabbit, of all the animals, you know, in the animal kingdom, has really good vision because its eyes sit far back on its head and very high up. So it can see sideways, backwards, frontwards, anything up above in the air.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got that great awareness, and that's what was lacking for me after that accident. You know, I was very sad, I was very depressed, I thought it was my fault, life's not fair. You know, all that kind of stuff, and that's where my focus is. Every day I would get up and focus on that, and
right.
That just takes you the other way. So once I got clear about that, and it was a bit of a traumatic event. I was down in North Carolina, and I really wasn't in a good state. I was considering taking my own life. It was in October after the accident was July, and I called my mom, and I was half drunk, or probably more than half drunk, which was what I did a lot those days, and the first thing she said to me is, you know, I said, hey, Mom, or whatever, and she said, when are you coming home? We can't wait to see you. And I have six brothers and a sister and a lot of family, and up until that point, I wasn't letting them in to help me get better after the accident because they didn't understand, they weren't there, you know, all those excuses. So when my mom said that, you know, even amidst my drunkenness, I had this huge lump in my throat. I could hardly talk, so overwrought with emotion, and it was right then that I hung up. And I started to entertain a vision. I'm like, man, I got to get better. This was July until October. And it was
mm-hmm.
the first time I considered getting better and what would that look like. And I just sat there and I said, oh, I got to get up tomorrow and drive home, right? So I envisioned myself driving home. When I got home, I got to go back to work a couple days a week. Got to go back to school, go get my master's, get engaged with things. So as soon as I started to envision those things, a couple things happened. My whole energy shifted, right? I didn't get better overnight. But you get more focus and you get more energy, and then you get home and you start taking actions to produce that reality.
Right,
so
exactly.
That's what I'll do anytime, you know, I work with a client. Oftentimes, if they're not where they want to be, many times they focus on where they are versus where they want to be. So it's always getting back to what is that vision. So let's say, and depending on the intensity of it, you know, if it's somebody just battling day to day, you don't want to give them a year vision. It's too overwhelming.
Right.
Okay, all right, let's just look out, you know, today's Thursday, let's look out to Monday. So let's say Monday, you know, we're together and I say, how you doing? You say, you know, I'm doing better. So what needs to happen between now and Monday for you to say that? And then we just start working that. Okay, now what actions can we take to produce this? You know, and then with some people, when I work with people who are, you know, good, pretty charged up, you know, we'll do it for a year. And we'll sit down and we'll, you know, depending on their personality, if they're right brain creative, you know, like I am, I just write a letter to myself for the whole year and say, here's what I'm going to produce. Here's my vision. Money, health, spirituality, relationships, everything. And then I put that in Outlook as an all-day event in my calendar, and it shows up about every 4 or 5 days, and I just keep reading it. And then I get relentless.
I love that.
Say,
well, I'm going to put you on
the idea.
That, yeah, exactly. So I'm going to pause you for a second, Danny. That is one of the best takeaways I've heard in a long time. So you write yourself a letter, and you put it in your Outlook calendar, and it pops up every 5 days.
Yep.
That's
you can
fabulous.
Set the recurrence for, you know, I often tell people they should pop it up every day. And I say, yeah, sometimes if it pops up every day, you become numb to it. You know,
mm-hmm.
So you want to set a frequency where you're almost kind of looking forward to it. You know, you're looking at your calendar and say, oh, here it is. Tomorrow, the next day, I can read it again.
That's
you know,
great.
Because we have to stay conscious of it. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I went to a great coaching school called the Hudson Institute out in Santa Barbara. And I'll never forget, we did that exercise, and it was probably back in 2006, you know, or 7.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to do it more. So that's a lot of power. So, you know, the question, I kind of, long answer to your question, but the question was, how do you work with your kids or whoever when they're having a bad day? A lot of times we try to, what can you learn from it, and what's it going to look like when it doesn't feel this way anymore? and just try to take them
well.
To the future.
I'm dealing with adult children and young children.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you draw that line? I don't know. I guess that's the only word I can come up with as line, where mm-hmm. I don't ever feel I'm ever going to stop being their parent.
Mm-hmm.
But in some cases and sometimes it almost feels like I'm enabling the behavior by being their mother. Does
mm-hmm.
that make sense?
You can say a little more if you want, just so
well,
I can get some clarity. I mean, I think I know where
okay.
you're going.
I have two older children. I have one that's 24, just became a father. You know, good kid overall. You know, he's a teacher and things, but he has some anger issues that are very prominent and he's not dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have a 23-year-old daughter who just moved home, who is about to have a baby in September,
mm-hmm.
who's living with us, and there's kind of this tug of war, so to speak, I'm feeling with still being able to parent my 11 and 8-year-old the way that they're accustomed to being parented, and now being kind of pulled into still parenting the other two.
Yeah. Well, I think it's important, and you probably know this, in all those situations, the more that we can lead with love and make that
mm-hmm.
a real big factor in our dealings, the better off it's going to be. Vision is a powerful thing. I think it works for young kids as well as older kids. Sometimes when there's people that have issues, you know, the anger issues or some of those things, that might be out of my expertise. You know, I may offer up, you know, to go get a therapist or something of that nature. Because I got to keep the lines really clear on what coaching is. You know, coaching is moving forward.
I work in kind of your, I'm an energy healer and I work with aromatherapy and I work with emotional relief and, you know, that's
great.
What I do.
Yep.
However, being their mother,
right.
It, you know, as you know, that how that whole family thing goes when you work in those circles. What I'm trying to say is how, you know, they still have this mentality that I'm supposed to still be doing the things I'm doing for the 11 and the 8-year-olds. Does that make sense? And
I guess it does. Yeah, and
like
you know what?
Comparison.
As you know too, sometimes we try to bring what we do home to our kids, and they don't get it. You know, my kids
mm-hmm.
call me the prophet, and sometimes they look at me, you know, because I'm always asking them, like, you know, what can I do to be a better dad? And they say, you know, sometimes
yeah.
you got to back off the vision and focus stuff, Dad. You know. So
yeah.
they won't get it, but then they'll come home and they'll share a really cool conversation they had with somebody else, or they'll
mm-hmm.
come home and tell me about something, kind of smile, and they go, you know, I guess you're right. And I said, well, it's not about being right. I just think there's basic principles that we can all benefit from if we start to get in that mindset and practice them.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I don't have a – I wish I had a specific answer for
that. No, you did answer it actually without even knowing it because
yeah.
that's the focus here is they feel – that I'm trying to be right when all I'm doing is I'm answering a question that they asked me.
Right.
So I'm answering it in the best way of my own experience.
That's right.
And I answer the question, and then they're like, well, why do you need to be right? So I'm like, I'm
right.
not being right. I'm just answering the question.
That's it. That's
you know?
Such a powerful statement, Amy.
You know?
And a breakthrough I had with a guy that was really cool once is, you know, I had a lot of energy, you know, around rejection and, you know, in self business, there's a lot of rejection. So the fact
yeah.
that if I ask that question and they say, no, we don't want your services, he flipped it over for me and he said, just like you said, he said, how about if they're not rejecting you, they're just answering your question.
That's right.
I mean, it was a huge breakthrough for me in so many aspects of my life. To just say, wow, they're not rejecting me. They're just I can let them reject me if I want to go there. Otherwise, I can just say, wow, I asked a question and they answered it. Wasn't the answer I wanted, but where do I go from here?
Exactly. I love it.
Yeah.
That is awesome. And that's what I'm trying to get across, but I guess I need to stop thinking that a 23-year-old can think like a 40-year-old because what I'm learning is they need the experience, and that is something that a lot of people and parents, and that's why I was leading into,
that's what I'm learning through people like you, and what I've read a little bit about you and what other people are trying to help us, is to realize that we have to have our own experiences.
Right. Right.
Very cool. So you're
and,
listening.
You know, love is the unconditional, and you can tell them that and say, hey, this, you know, I'm coming from a place of love right now. So
right.
Do you want to talk about this, or do you want me to tell you what I think based on my experience? Because you're going to have a different reaction. I'll flip the ball over to you, and you tell me how you feel and what I should be saying and what you want from me. Or I can tell you based on experience probably the best one or two courses of action for you, you know, in this. But you got to know that it comes from love. It's not about right or wrong. It's not about judgment.
Right.
You know, so
that's
sometimes,
awesome.
You know, as we frame our conversations, you know, that helps for sure.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
But there's another principle, too. In Jackrabbit, there's five principles. So the first one is develop vision, create reality. So always make sure you got that good, clear vision.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so for the kids, when your daughter has her baby and all, let's spin forward eight months from now. You know, your life's really good. What's it going to look like? All right, great. And that will create usually a good energy when you can take somebody to a good space. And then every
mm-hmm.
day we kind of work through the actions, you know. And if we're not taking the actions, well, then what's the resistance there? What's the limiting beliefs that we have about not taking the actions? And then how do we reverse them? We can reverse limiting beliefs real quick. You know, just reverse them.
Need to buy them both a copy of this book.
yeah. Oh, gosh, I had tons of limiting beliefs. It's for darn sure. I still have them. You're never
yeah.
done with this stuff, right?
Oh, no, not ever.
Yeah.
It's a growth. And that is through the rest of our life. And
right.
I think more people are realizing that now. Instead of, you know, slow down, you know, this growth process can, you know, be hard or easy, however your choices are. And I
sure.
think that there's more and more people realizing that, which is really
yep.
exciting.
Yeah, it's very cool. It is very cool.
Very cool.
Yep.
So I'm going to pause here for a moment and remind everybody that you're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty, and I'm Rusty.
And I'm Amy.
And we have fabulous Danny Bader on the line, and I have a ton of questions for him. But if I have this many questions, you must as well, and you need that number to dial in. So feel free, 347-205-9443. And there's a couple of people in the chat room. So hi, chat room. And if you're sneaking us at the office, you know, you can always sign up for a free Blog Talk Radio account and chat with me live. So, Danny, I want to kind of pull us back a little bit because you said something that really resonated quite deeply with me, and I know that if we pull back a little bit, breathe, and refocus, I can get this information out of you. So you're sitting there in the car. You're drunk. You're emotionally exhausted, you're mentally taxed, you're spiritually confused, you're just having all of these emotions that
yeah.
we would call grief. You're
right.
in that grief place, and
sure.
you've put up all your blocks,
mm-hmm.
and nobody understands what you're going through. You're angry, you're afraid to reach out because you're afraid of being weak. You're angry, going through all of this chaotic tornado of emotions that grief provides,
mm-hmm.
then your mom calls. What do you think on a spiritual level that was for you?
Yeah, great. You framed that up real well. Two just points of correction. I was in a phone booth, actually, in North Carolina.
Oh, you were in a phone. They have
you remember
still?
When we used to have phone booths in society? Remember?
Yeah, long time
and
ago.
I called my mom.
Wow, that's a blast from the past.
And I think from a spiritual connection, because I'm a very spiritual person, is,
yeah.
You know, the spirit was there. And for whatever strange reason, that call and my mom and the connection that I have with her, because our relationship is really strong, you know, and perhaps the numbing or the effect of having a little buzz, you know, I can't explain it logically, and I've stopped trying. It was the connection and the breakthrough that I had with my mom right then was just the spirit getting me and saying, listen, you can't keep going down this course of action.
Right.
Taking your life is not the answer. And so, you know, people say, would you say it's a miracle? I say, call it whatever you want. But it was not logical. Because from July 28th up until October when I was down there,
And there were many people that tried to help me.
Yeah.
Tremendous amount of people. And I just wouldn't let them in. So another principle of Jackrabbit is called seek support. So as Amy's talking about her young children, all young people, you know, going through some struggles or whatever, it's very, very important to practice the principle of seeking support. You know, asking for help. A lot of times we don't because we're embarrassed or we have these beliefs about what they're going to think if I share, you know, why I'm struggling. Or it's weak, or I can do this myself.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
There's a great scene in the book that a lot of people have commented on. I'll just tell you real quick, there's a gentleman, and his nickname is Preacher, and he's sitting in a hot tub in Utah with Jake, and Preacher is teaching him this lesson of be support, and there's some pretty powerful dialogue that happens there. So I've gotten some good feedback. And then the other side is to be support. So we're much more happy and fulfilled, as Amy's doing right now, to be supportive of them, even when it's a struggle for us. You know, so
yeah.
That's the whole notion of who can I help? Who's hurting that needs some help? Where can I volunteer? Where can I give my time and energy? And you know, even if it's just, you know, the way we enter a store and talk to somebody or hold the door, or, you know, we're going through security line in an airport. You know, it doesn't have to be the formal volunteering, which is great too. So I know, you know, Rusty, that was just the working of the spirit.
Yeah, and that's
Amen.
What I'm just coming into is that knowing.
Yeah.
Instead of wishing or hoping is knowing and trusting it. And it's a really profound feeling when you understand that. And unfortunately, it doesn't seem I'm hoping the younger people get it sooner than when we all have.
Yeah.
Well, and I think
we'll do our best
by passive, they will, because, you know, we are teaching and demonstrating and actively participating in becoming more accepting of receiving and more accepting of giving and more accepting of being aware and allowing ourselves and taking that step back and reengaging with life instead of flying through it. You know, our parents worked really hard and small communities, but there was very little talk about, you know, being aware of nature, at least in my life, being aware of your surroundings. So it was pretty textbook in that sense.
Sure,
you know, you go to school, you come home, you do your homework, and you're locked out on the weekends because, well, that's what happens with kids. You go outside and you play all day. So for us, as a community, and this community that is building, is becoming very strong, we're engaging our children in more spiritual practices. We're engaging our children in yoga and meditation and these concepts that we had to learn as adults.
Right.
So I think by default, accidentally, I think our children are going to be much more aware. You know, I mean, look at our kids.
I think
Amy.
They already are. I think
yeah,
they're going that
I mean,
way now.
But it's more accepted. It's acceptable now.
Right, exactly. And that's what I'm working toward, is working with children more, because they're going to need the skills that he's writing about, all these skill facts. I'm so glad I only read a little bit, but I was very intrigued with what you were writing, because it's pretty much how I try to extend to the younger people in my life. I just, you know, sometimes it's better to read something. I know sometimes when I have to get something across to my husband, I write him a letter. That's why I love that whole write yourself a letter thing. That is amazing, because sometimes when you read it from another perspective, whatever works, if they get it by reading his book or hearing it from someone else, as long as they get it, that's the point.
That is. Yeah, I did it. I talked from my daughter's sixth graders. Was it last month, I guess, and that was pretty cool. So about the book and the five principles, you know. So it's just, how do you apply them to the kids, you know?
Right.
And it was cool. It was well received. We had fun.
So Danny, why don't you give yourself a shout out as to where people can find more information about you? You have this great website, a great book, wonderful personality. A great story. Tell it to 90,000 people.
Thanks.
Think we're still at 90. I'm not sure.
Thank you. Yeah, hello at 90,000. So DannyBader.com is my website,
and there's some video on there and some blogs. And then I also have a Facebook account, and I had a Facebook personal one and a Jackrabbit one. And as you ladies probably experience, you know, it's so tough to be, you know, Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn and all these different places. So for the most part, I'll do some work on the website still, but there's some good videos out there that might give them a better understanding of me and my message if they're interested. And then, you know, through Facebook, you know, I'll do some stuff through Facebook. The book itself is available, you know, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It's called Back from Heaven's Front Porch. And you can also get it through my website. So if they got it there, I would just sign, write a little note in it, and then send it off. But, yeah, that's it. And, you know, I'm just looking to do some more speaking around it, around the five principles. I've done some talks. On my website, there's a couple of videos of some talks that I did. And I you know, my vision has always been and will continue to be having the book made into a movie. So
Very cool. We're
continuing to work it to get to certain people. And I will continue to hold that vision and take the appropriate action because I think it would be a phenomenal movie that would be really cool for people to attend. We get them thinking. And I think it could be such that young people could go, parents could go, and they'd all get something out of it. And it may be the medium, Amy, as you and I chatted about, and how do we bridge that conversation now so they understand where we're coming from. And now we're just saying, well, what about these five principles? Do you think they make sense? Is there anyone that you should be applying more now in your life, and how can I support you in applying that? That opens up a whole different conversation.
Yes, and that's where I think we need to go, because I think that the children, you know, as we've always said, you know, we don't understand our children. It's the way of thinking, like Rusty, you know, pointed out how different our childhoods were compared to, and, you know, this is only, you know, 20 years later. It's not like a huge, significant amount of time. So you think about what they're going to have to deal with 20 years from now. They need these tools to be able to get through these moments and things that, you know, trials and tribulations in their life as well. And I really like your approach. So what are you going to be coming to the East Coast or in this area at any time? Do you have
I don't have anything booked right now up in the Boston area, although I do some work with a corporate client up there, so I may try to link in some Jackrabbit talk or talks there. I've got a buddy of mine. I'll keep you ladies in the loop there, and I'll certainly post anything
on the website. Yeah, keep us in the loop, because I do event planning around in this area, so if I can get some interest, possibly, that would be a great, I think, thing to get into our community.
Sure. Yeah, check it out. And there's a YouTube I did for a friend of mine that runs a nonprofit, and I just did about a 45-minute talk. I think it was back in November. They do a nonprofit to get books to underprivileged folks and clothing as well. So it was really cool. It was right before the holidays, about 100, 120 people, and we had a great time. You know, I just told a little bit of my story and the principles and tried to get people to examine their life and to see if there was one or two principles they might need to lean into a little bit more. It was cool.
Very cool. So you're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty. I'm Rusty.
And I'm Amy.
And I want you to call in. I'm going to push a little harder on finding out what all five principles are. And I'm sure Danny is willing to share that. So the number here is 347-205-9443. And again, check out Danny's site. It's DannyBader, BADER.com. And he has two chapters available for you to read. And it's worth it. It's a great story. So, all right, Danny, can you give us the quick run-through of all five principles?
Sure. Yeah, so at the center, it's the model of this Jackrabbit. And as I said earlier, there's no specific sequence. So you say, okay, you got to do this principle first and then this one. So it's just that simple model that we've all seen in our consulting world of arrows that go around and kind of turn into the middle. In the middle, the first principle is develop vision and then create reality. So it's very similar as Amy talked about. She's got a good vision now around this store. So she's going to take the actions to turn this store into a reality. We can do it at so many levels. I did it, you know, develop a vision of getting better versus, you know, going the other way. So that's the main principle in the middle. And then around the outside, there's four other ones. And I've talked about a couple. One is called be still. So all these principles, I believe, create happiness and fulfillment. happiness in the moment, right, and the resiliency to rebound from tough times. Fulfillment is I'm continuing to develop visions and I turn them into reality. And because of that, I've created something and I'm fulfilled. And then once I get there, I say, okay, here's two more visions that I'm going to work on, and here's three more visions or whatever. So to contribute to that, be still is just the ability, as you ladies said, to slow down. Breathe. I just took a five-mile run. It was just me. I don't wear music or anything. As thoughts come in, I just try to let them go right through my head, and I just run. I pray. I sit quietly. I do a little bit of yoga. I want to get back into that more. I surf in the morning down the beach. I take the dog for walks. So a lot of times when people hear something like this, this be still, but less, which we've talked about, which is good. A lot of times people think, oh, gosh, I don't have time to yoga, and I got to go to the gym and the studio. Stillness can be created in the moment. Go outside, sit, close your eyes, stare at a beautiful tree, and try to breathe as slow as possible. And any thoughts that come in, just let them go. So that's the be still. Another one is to know thyself. So as we develop our vision now, there's a lot of strength in really knowing who you are, and we've talked about it. What are your strengths in terms of your professional strengths? So your ability to speak, your ability to sell, your ability to process numbers and information that way. You know, what are your strengths in terms of your own self-talk? Where are your limiting beliefs? What are the values that you have right now? How does this vision support your values, or how does it go against your values? So these things are all connected. The next one then is to seek support and be support, as we talked about. So who can support me in this vision? Who or what can support me in this vision, and how can I be of support to other people in their visions? It might be helping them to know themselves better. It may be helping them, leading them to times of stillness. It may be helping them to get their vision because they're just stuck. And oftentimes, you got to get unstuck, you got to just ask the question, what would it be like if you were unstuck? A lot of times people say, I feel like crap. I say, great, well, if you didn't feel like crap, how would you describe that? Oh, I'd be happy. Great. So what needs to happen between right now to get you from crap to happy and have that conversation? So the ability to seek support and to be support. And then as we've talked about, the last principle on the outside is called evolve, and that's to undergo continuous and gradual change. So the people that I've studied that are happy and fulfilled, they have a mindset of evolution. What have I learned from today? What have I learned from my successes? What have I learned from my failures? What do I need to learn more of? What do I need to unlearn? Where do I need to let go? What baggage am I carrying around that is not serving me well? And what anger am I holding on to? And what jealousy and what resentment and what blame and all those things? You got to get in there and get real clear with them so you can just shed them. And Amy, you know that as well. I mean, if you're talking about energy release, gosh, what a wonderful thing when we do it. And whether we do it through dialogue or whether we do it through ourselves being still, or you know, somebody practices some Reiki on you or something, it's just a great process to shed some of the stuff we have, you know?
Well, giving them permission that it's okay to feel that emotion, that they're not doing something wrong by feeling that way. It's okay that you feel that way, just let it go.
Sure.
You know, and, you know, it's not an easy process, like you said, and it's taken us a long time, but it's really refreshing to know, and that's why I love doing this show with Rusty, is how many people out there are getting it. It's refreshing to me to know.
Oh, yeah.
And having all this collaboration between us all writing, you know, I know Rusty's, you know, written a book, and I'm, you know, been thinking about it and put some stuff on paper, but it's really, we need to do this. So we need to share all of these wonderful ways of communicating and showing love, because that's what's going to heal this planet.
Yes, I absolutely. Well said. Well said.
Very cool. I want, if you're comfortable, we have about 17 minutes left, and I really want to dig into a little bit more of you and who you are and what made you tick? What inspires you? What, you know, I have taken 2 years of my life and gone back and forth with writing my own biography, which is an editing process. Everybody's been listening to me say that. I swear it's going to be out in June. And that was very cathartic, and that was very, it was wonderful. It was a great journey for me. But for you, you know, what inspired you to write your book? What inspired you to share your story? What motivated you to move forward and really open up? You know, you're coming from a place of grief and closed and tight to all of a sudden just really opening up your soul and your heart to inspire other people.
Yeah, it's a great question. I guess it was a couple things. Number one, it was the healing process after the accident. It was really getting in, and this was kind of even before I created these five principles. And they're nothing new. They're just Danny's spin on it, you know. But the ability to know myself, you know, because I worked in corporate America for some time. I worked at a credit card company in the call center, and it just, I'm like, man, this is not what I want to do. You know, no judgment on anybody that has those jobs, but it was just that evolution, right, undergoing continuous and gradual change. So then I finally got into the education department there, and I started doing speaking, and I started doing workshops, and I started to talk with people at breaks about things that we had kind of touched on. And I thought, man, this feels so good. And then I started to get feedback from people that said, hey, it's really cool to be around you. You have a nice energy, you know, inspiring and kind of uplifting, and you don't take yourself too seriously. And the more I shared the story with people, they're like, oh, man, you should definitely write a book. So then I break through some of my demons, right, and my self-talk.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Danny, who are you to write a book? You've never written a book. What if it doesn't sell any? What if people don't like, you know, all that chatter that we have up there?
Oh, yeah.
So that would be knowing yourself, right? Knowing
right.
yourself is all that self-talk and all that chatter. And then when you know yourself and you say, you know what, my self-talk sucks, now it's how do I evolve out of that? Okay, well, maybe I need to go seek support. Maybe I need to go read that book, Taming the Demons or whatever. Maybe I need to go talk to somebody. Or taming your gremlins or whatever. You know, you just got to go find a resource that's going to start to put this self-talk thing in more perspective. So really what makes me tick, there's a great book called The Art of Possibility. It's by Benjamin Zander, who actually, I don't know if he's still up there, but he hung out in your area. He was the conductor of the Boston Philharmonic Orchestra.
I saw that.
He wrote a book with his wife called The Art of Possibility, which is just wonderful. And in there was a saying in the beginning by a guy, drawing a blank on the guy's name. I'm walking to my office to see if I can grab it. But it says something, and I'll paraphrase. He says, you know, back in the Hellenistic period in 450 B.C. or whatever, the philosophers had a noble cause. The philosopher's job was to get people to think in such a way that would make them happier and more fulfilled. And I remember when I read that, I'm like, that's it. There's Danny Bader's purpose. I want to engage in work with people to get them to think where they're going to take action that moves them to greater levels of happiness and fulfillment. Period. And if I ain't doing that, I'm not signing up. So
the
work that I do in the productivity certainly helps. You know, writing the book, getting it made into a movie would help. You know, I have some folks I'm going to talk to about maybe doing a little television work around this, you know, inspiring shows and good stories about inspiring people. So that's what makes me tick. How can I be a vehicle? Not me, right? Not ego, but how can I be a vehicle to impact somebody when they walk away from the experience and they do something different that leads to happiness and fulfillment for them and for others? So as Amy said, right, just trying to heal this planet a little bit.
Yeah, see, and you just hit my sweet spot, because the work that I do, like a lot of people, you know, they're there for the monetary, you know, the monetary gain of it. And of course, I need to make a living. But what makes me tick is watching the growth of that person, from that person that walked in my office in total distress, and 6 months later is a completely different person. Their life is in a completely different place, and a place they want to be, is just
right.
So rewarding.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It is.
And if we can do that, you know, we'll make enough money to provide and send our kids to college and do what we need to do.
Yeah. And it's a blessing to be able to be so passionate about what you do. And that's what I encourage all people to do now, is to tap into their passion and make that their life work.
Right, absolutely.
Very good. So
good.
I can talk
with you ladies for hours here.
That's the hope.
Maybe one day.
Yeah, that would be cool. That would be
maybe
cool.
You'll host your own radio show.
There, right? Sit down outside with a nice lobster roll and just chat.
That's right.
Oh, yes.
That's right. Take them to the lobster shack over in Wells.
There you go. Good spot.
So maybe you'll host your own radio show one day and have us on.
That'd be cool. Talk about your book.
Absolutely.
Did you feel a little pressure there?
No, not at all. Actually, I've been teeing it up. I've been offering my own pressure to myself to hurry up because I've had several TV
radio
shows.
And I offer
show.
Pressure every week.
Awesome. Yes, that's what pushed me too. As a matter of fact, we were in Boston.
Yeah.
We were, as a friend of mine, Kathleen. She was a coach out there, and we were at an Italian place in North Boston, a little place, brick place, real good food, having a glass of wine. Looked and she said, "All right, Danny Bader, are you going to finish this book or not? Because you've been talking about it too long."
Yeah.
And I'm like, whoa, slow down now. I haven't seen you in months. This is just a friendly dinner. And she just called me out. I said, yeah, I'm going to finish it. And she said, when? And she said, great, would you like me to hold you accountable? And I said, yes. And after that, the thing just gained momentum, and, you know, it was really a cool experience.
I have a couple of whipping posts.
Good.
So it definitely trying to finish up a couple more worksheets and then off it goes to the publisher. So I want to circle around with the last few minutes that we have and just kind of pick your noodle a little bit. And for the listeners that have followed me since January of last year, they know when I say I have a Cheshire Cat grin, I intentionally ask certain questions with a smile on my face because I already know the answer and I know what you're going to say. But I wanted to come from you. So here was an interesting conversation I had with my pen pal in Switzerland the other day, and his working experience. He works for a company in Switzerland. He's American, and going back and forth between the offices, he made a comment that Americans are extremely distracted. So I want to kind of pick your brain about what you think that means, especially in the workplace. They're too distracted.
Yeah, well,
you send them an email with all the answers, yet they whip back questions that have already been answered, that kind of distraction.
Yeah. Well, in my productivity work, I mean, we deal with that all the time. Yesterday was with a group. We did a seminar in a health network, and then I go off after this to work with a large leaders at a large hotel chain, you know, international hotel chain. And they're distracted for a couple of reasons, I think. Not I think, they tell me. Number one is the streams of information. So you've got your IM, you've got your voicemail. Most of them have two phones. They all sync to the account. It's a constant stream of email coming in. As Amy said, most of these organizations have created a culture of immediate response within emails. So when I start to coach people, I'm like, you got to stop the madness. You got to start to shut some of those things down. So we teach them just and encourage them, how do you go into your email just twice a day to process and organize it, so to convert it to what it is? And most of your emails are either trash, reference, you got to save it, or action. How do you convert them into that and get them out of the inbox? Don't from there. So we try to limit the distraction that way. That's the work that I do with a company, a great company called McGee Productivity. I think people are also distracted because life is moving so fast at home. Most times their spouses are working as well. Their kids are involved in a bazillion things. Even when they're with their kids, they're on their phone. The kids are on the phone. I just had that experience with my daughter this morning. You know, she's on her phone. I said, do you want to talk about anything, or do you just want to use your phone, or what do you want to do? And then I think there's a distraction, too, from people that's kind of twofold. There's many people that I find don't really want to be doing the work that they're doing, as Amy talked about earlier. And I think there's a distraction there, where they sit and work, and there's that continual keep showing up, like, God, I really don't want to be here. What else could I do? But I need the money. And then the other side of that distraction is the uncertainty of the workplace. How many jobs are changing? How many people are downsizing? And all that kind of stuff. That pressure is just perpetual. So the flow of information, dissatisfaction with what they're actually doing, the pace of life at home, and then the possibility that their job, their team, their division may change. Huge distractions.
I think it's also slowing down the growth process because people aren't taking a chance to go into another realm of business or to try something new or something. Because they feel they need to stay in that steady, reliable income. So
yeah.
People aren't taking those chances, so the growth process is kind of slowing down.
Yep. You're right, because it's through that that we grow, right? When we step out of our comfort zone and what we know. But so many
some
people will stay
forced.
In what they know because they know it.
Yeah, some of
when
us
we
get
go
forced.
Into the unknown, that emotional brain, you know, that part of our brain kicks in that likes easy, familiar, and valuable. And even though we're not so satisfied with our life right now, it's easy. I get up, I know where I'm going, I know what my paycheck's going to be every week, I know my client, I know my software. And it kind of forces them in there, you know?
Absolutely. So give us an example of what else we could do to be less distracted. I know for me, I have two computers that are going all the time, my cell phone, my landline, and many other
yeah, I would
virtual
say here's a real simple thing. Lay out your calendar for the day in blocks of time. If you adhered to that calendar, it would be a really productive and for the most part, flowing kind of day. You'd be a lot
right.
Flow. Lay your calendar out that way. So for half an hour in the morning, I'm going to go in and I'm going to do my emails or whatever. And then I'm going to jump in and I'm going to work on that PowerPoint presentation. Then I'm going to take the dog for a walk. And then I'm going to come back and I'm going to deal with, you know, whatever other issues. And then I got to jump on a conference call. And then really lay your calendar out in such a way that that would be productive. And then just start to follow it. I mean, you'd be amazed at how many people, when they do that and they can see what their work is, and they stop continually picking up the iPhone and the BlackBerry, you
mm-hmm.
know, turn that off sometimes. You know, if you're a leader in an organization, have a conversation with your team around turnaround time on emails. Because oftentimes people are firing back. When I say, what do you do when you go in the inbox? They say, I look for an email from my boss. And if there is one, I respond to it right away. And then
absolutely.
I talk to the bosses, and I said, you know that's
that
happening?
All the time.
Yeah. And I said, you know that's happening? And they go, what? You know, I got good people. They get back to me right away. I said, but you set a culture where they're afraid to get out of their inbox. And you
right.
just told me that working in from your inbox is not serving you well. And he says, well, they don't have to get back to me right away. And I said, but they don't know that. You got to have. You
right.
got to start to set some protocol. If I need a message right away, I'm going to text you or I'm going to call you.
You hear emails. That I hear that on an international level. It is amazing to me how many people, first thing they do is they shoot back an email to the boss, and the boss, not acknowledging that one key piece that you just pointed out, developing that culture, the boss uses the words, my team always gets back to me fast,
mm-hmm.
not acknowledging that that's the kind of pressure, and it's not intentional pressure. I mean, the boss is being proud, acting and speaking proudly of the staff, but not realizing the consequence of that. And I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. High five.
You got it.
So what I do with my clients is I actually have them set their phone on a timer, and that's how they divide the day, because the visual is one part where when your calendar pops up to say, okay, and you need to change gears, then you have the audio to kind of break up that zoning that people do.
Mm-hmm.
And for some of the harder ones that I've worked with over the years, I actually have them color code their calendar.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so they have the three varieties of stimuli.
Mm-hmm.
It's very cool.
That is good, yeah. Very good.
All right. Let's see. So we are live on air with Danny Bader, Bader. Go check out his website and his book. The last question that I ask every guest is, what is the one thing that you want an international audience to take away from you today? What is the one gift that you can share?
Develop a vision for themselves. Have an image in their head of what they want to create in their future for them, their family, their career. Make sure they have a clear image of what they want to create.
Are there any tools that you would recommend? I'm a big treasure map person. I like the sitting down coloring and mapping things out, but what kinds of techniques would you use?
Sure. Treasure mapping is real cool. Vision boards, where you start to think about what you want to create for yourself, and then you go out and find pictures and sayings and cartoons and all kinds of things that link back to that. You know, writing a letter and predicting your future. You know, George Bernard Shaw, the Irish poet, said life is not about finding yourself. Life is about creating yourself.
Amen.
So too many people are in that mode of trying to find myself and find the time to do this and find the time to start my own business and find the time to look for another job and find the time to exercise and find it, you know. Create it. Be really bold. And just then answer the question to yourself. Go forward to anything and say, you know what? In 6 months, if my life is kicking ass and I am off the charts happy, what's it going to look like? And just have that conversation with themselves.
It's amazing what happens, and I'm running out of time, but it's amazing what happens when you really sit down and put onus on yourself and, you know, put on your wings and jump off that emotional and mental cliff that you've sat on for so long. This radio show wouldn't be possible if I didn't do that. You know, I had to say, this is my vision for myself, and I'm just going to do it. It's not going to hurt anything. Go, do, be, love, share, you know. Jump off the cliff, put on your virtual wings, and go.
That's it.
It's wonderful what happens. The transformation to you, your family, your community, and the new people you add to your community.
Yes. It all begins with a good vision, a bold vision.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Well, Danny, namaste to you. I am so grateful that you made the time to talk to us today. And everybody go out and check out his website at Danny, DannyBader.com and read the chapters. I just found him very inspirational, motivational, and my hat's off to you, my friend.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, Rusty and Amy. I have certainly enjoyed it, and I will set a vision that our paths will cross sometime.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah, it sure would.
Thank
all right,
be
much. Well, ladies. Have a great evening.
Enjoy your afternoon.
All right, bye-bye. Thanks.
Wow. Wasn't he wonderful?
Yes, I don't know. I got a special kind of vibe from him. I think, you know, when I started reading about it, I was like, wow, this is pretty intriguing because I read a similar book by another person that I like to read. It's kind of the five same principles, but the way he described it was so much more to the point, like you had said earlier.
Yeah, yeah. He's rock on. I can't wait to watch him grow further and sprout wider. And
I think we need to have him come up here and just speak.
Why not? We'll make it happen.
Okay. Yeah.
Make contacts with UNH. See what happens.
Absolutely.
What a cool person. I got such a great vibe from him.
And how else did we have learned about him right here?
That's right. So next week we have Dennis Buckmaster, who I have been able to speak with on and off. We just, you want to put him in your lap and squeeze his cheeks. He's just a character. He's got a great personality. His wife had an aunt, Harriet Holbrook Smith, and they wrote a story called Healing, Romance, and Revolution. I've been able to read most of the book.
I've heard of that.
And,
is it online that you can read a few chapters of it?
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
He sent me the book. I started reading it in L.A., and I was reading this woman's life and her journals and her letters back and forth from being a nurse in China during World War II, and she is spunky. She's a spitfire. So I'm really looking forward to talking to Dennis and his wife next week. And we have about 30 seconds left. I'm rambling on, but I wanted to remind everybody that I love you, and I think you're beautiful, and you're amazing, and I'm hoping that today's show inspired you to, you know, start writing a vision for what you want in your life, because the only person who can get it is you. I'm just a tool. Amy's just a tool. We're just pieces of the puzzle to help you get there. But know that you're loved and adored. I will talk to you next Wednesday.